The talk tonight is really about equanimity. But before that, I want to support the understanding that the four Brahma Viharas, namely metta, love, loving kindness, friendliness, karuna, compassion, khemla, mudita, joy with the joy of the world, joy of life, upekkha, equanimity, steadiness, all of those have to work in the world. They are not theoretical, private, spiritual practices that we do kind of to be Buddhist. They have to work, they have to act, they have to guide us to make change in our life and in the life of the world around us. It doesn't mean that because we do Brahma Viharas, we've got to be activists and go straight to Kaplan. Okay, we go to Kaplan, but how do we go to Kaplan? What kind of activists are we? And what are the powers and tools we have to go out and make a difference in the world? And it's really right there we're talking about. I'll give a small example. Not a small example, a huge example. Sorry. Tibetans. Dalai Lama and the Tibetans. It's an unbelievable massacre and ethnic cleansing that happened. And thousands and thousands of Tibetans were killed. And great monks and great practitioners that died in the snow trying to escape from Tibet to India. And again, the Tibetans themselves say the only thing that helped us survive is our compassion. There wasn't any other tools. It helped us survive the massacre, the disaster. So we have to act in the world, whatever we do. That's life. Doesn't mean we have to go to Kaplan, but we get up in the morning and we have to take the children to school. I don't know. We have to see people. We have to work. We have to engage with people. We have to talk all day. With what? There is a very powerful Tibetan teaching on how to be out in the world called Shambhala Warrior. And the Shambhala Warrior, you may have heard about it, and there's a chapter in my book on this. But what are the tools of someone that goes out in the world and makes change? And the Shambhala Warriors are a secret people. They don't wear uniforms, but they make change in the world. And the tools are what we're doing here. The two wings, wisdom and compassion, are the tools of the Shambhala Warrior, making change secretly, underneath, going to the heart of difficulty and staying there and making change. I just also want to say that when the Tibetans talk about compassion and the Mahayana, and I won't go into all the history, it's a very amazing story, but the Mahayana movement that went, when the Dharma went from India to Tibet, one of the main, they reawakened compassion as a spiritual and life power and central to the practice. When it got a little bit stuck in the Theravada world. But when the Tibetans talk about compassion, they really mean all the Brahma Viharas, all four of them. But it's a sort of one word that encompasses all of them. So just so that you know, if you read compassion, it actually includes all, but it's coming from the Mahayana world, which is more the Tibetan world. And in a way, we're not, compassion is already here in the meta practice that we've already done, because it's actually impossible to really have authentic love and care and a heart open without acknowledging the pain and the struggle of existence. It's just impossible to do that. As soon as our heart is open, we'll also see all the difficulties of existence. We will see it. So it'll be there anyway. Compassion is right inside. It's so mixed. Chimla is going to be right inside metta, the ahava. Cannot be any other way. Because we ourselves are happy, joyful children, and then the next minute we cry. So it's bound to be there, and in already what we've been practicing. So in a way, you can say we've been practicing metta and karuna already. But I think we need to go a bit further with equanimity, because it's very strong as a understanding and a movement, a practice in us when things are really difficult, and they are. And equanimity is really important, that we can allow and be with the pain of the world without being destroyed by it. And that's equanimity. It's really needed for all the other three Brahma Viharas. And it's come up again and again in the groups, in this retreat, that people feel we are growing love, we're growing caring heart, our heart is open, but it's too much. I can't take it all. Matsif is the word. Yeah, matsif. It's too much. And a lot of the tears that have come here, which are really needed, it's really okay. But it's because it's just too much. My heart is open. My heart is with the world. There's goodness in the heart. Caring is in the heart. But it's just too much. How do I cope with what's going on? And it's equanimity that will help us. So it's an important, movement, one of the Brahma Viharas. It's really important for us. So in Hebrew, Hishtavut Nefesh, Izun, Yitzivut, it's not Adishut. And I'll talk about that later. But it's that sense of being steady like a ship, almost. It's really interesting that in the ship, they put water inside the ship at the bottom. Why? So that the ship doesn't go, every wave doesn't go like this. So big ships going through the seas, they have a lot of weight down there. They have water down there to make them steady. It's like my kids used to have a Nahum Takum. It's got weight. There's weight. It doesn't, nothing. It can't be destroyed. Actually, we've been doing it here. Nearly every meditation, I've come out with the image of the earth, right? Adama. It's all the time I'm coming with that. It's a reminder. And it's so, it's a way that we can ride the waves of change and of difficulty without them knocking us down totally. So we're riding on the waves of change and on the waves of difficulty that the world brings us. And I have to say that it's not a, it's a very advanced practice and a very beginning practice at the same time. I have no problem bringing it to beginners on a Zoom talk in wherever, or the most subtle places of consciousness, because there, it's there in both. Because even in our first meditation, the fact that we sit quiet and steady and not running all the time, and what's fixed, what needs fixing, what's this, what's that, we are holding with two hands, not really hands, but we are holding pleasant, unpleasant. We're holding Bali, lo Bali. We're holding Zeva, Zeva. Less preference, adifriot. And that inside awareness to be bigger than Tovli Rali, to have an awareness that's bigger than that, that's the basis of mindfulness, that we can hold Vedana, which Simi was talking about, that things are like that. They are feelings. They are good for me, bad for me, unpleasant, pleasant, nice, not nice. I want, I don't want. The whole world of our interests. And there's a place of awareness which is holding that. That's the first steps of mindfulness, and the last as well. It's something that we can really explore. It does need us to kind of be aware of our vulnerability. Not to expect that somehow life is safe. It's not. The Buddha said, there is no safety whatsoever. Once we're born in a body, we can't find it. Life is like a poem from the Theravada tradition. Is like a needle, a seed balanced on a needle. Zera al spitz shel machat. That's life. Everything is unstable life. We are just born. We manage to be born somehow. And then we go again. And anything can take us. And we can see how easy it is. In 1 minute, a war can happen. That nobody really is. It just happened. It, through all kinds of... I read an article in The Guardian. I read The Guardian every day. It's for me the Haaretz, but I also read Haaretz actually. But there was an amazing, a really very insightful article in The Guardian a few days ago, that all the wars being fought now, Putin suddenly deciding, getting up in the morning and decide I have to invade Ukraine, and millions of people dying and suffering and destruction. And Netanyahu, and Trump, and Ahmadinejad, and all over. They're all angry old men. And they make young people die and suffer and have a life of trauma. So, well, I'm just giving that example that there isn't really any safety in this world. And we shouldn't be under illusion that we can find real safety. It's just the nature of life, that everything is changing, everything is coming and going, living, dying, including us. So the Dharma is really about cutting through illusion, ashlaya. It's not about building illusions even of niceness or goodness, or it's not that. but it's certainly about developing tools to meet reality as it is, and to see reality as it is, and then to be there with it, including the fact that we are temporary, chadpami. And so we do need to ask, what do we do if life is unsafe? And we have no illusions that life is somehow going to protect us, protected. Dafka, in the Mahabharata, there was an amazing scene where the king, on his journey to awakening, and he had a dog next to him. You know the name of the king? I forgot. Vashishta? Maybe someone knows. He had a dog going, he was on his way to awaken, you know, to the awaken, to beyond. And he had his dog next to him. What's the name of the dog? Dharma. So the king and the Dharma together. Anyway, they met the Naga. The Naga is in the Indian mythology a sea snake, but it's very similar to the way snake is in the Jewish and Middle Eastern mythology. It's very, very similar. Same images, same meaning, same. And the snake comes and the Naga comes and says, well, you can cross this pool, this lake, if you answer questions. And there was loads of them, 150, something like that. But one of them was, what's the most amazing, extraordinary, unbelievable thing in the universe? And because he's the king, he got it. He said that all human beings are going to die, but they behave as if they're not. They think they're not. Illusion. So we do need to kind of be out of the illusion, but then it does ask us, so where's our protection? And that's an important question. If everything is passing and our life is a seed on a needle, so what about protection? And the Buddha said that protection is in awakening. That awakening is our protection. So clearly it's something else than shirion chitzoni. It's clearly something else. And where is the protection then? What sort of shirion are we talking about? What sort of armor? What sort of shield? And the answer is, we need shield inside. An invisible armor, shirion, that's inside. It's not a bad thing to have a shirion. We need it, otherwise we can't be alive. I was in Europe watching. I came across a house with a garden, and nearly the whole garden was full of tortoises, tsavim, that were walking about, and there was a little fence around to keep them in there, and I was fascinated. They were just, someone was looking after tortoises. They had maybe 7-8 of them, beautiful tortoises walking. And shirion, they've got a shirion they wear. It's so lovely. There's nothing wrong with the shirion itself, but we have to know what we do with it. And if it's the shirion, the guard, the armor, external, in the end, we suffer from it and other people suffer. So an internal armor, protection, is less defensive, haganati, it's less automatic. It allows life, it allows things, it doesn't shut the door, it doesn't close things down, it doesn't deny. It allows life, and including pain, but it doesn't destroy us. And That's the character of an internal, and equanimity is that. And it's really helpful to understand that what it's about is that the pain can come in, we can feel we're not, we don't have armor, we can't look at pain. The armor, external armor is shut down, close the door, turn on Netflix, go on holiday endlessly, run away, shut down. It's not that. It's knowing pain, but it doesn't work in us. It doesn't build in us story, fabrication. I'm a victim. We have to get them back. We have to, as Simi was saying, revenge. Stories and stories and fabrications and constructions coming out of the pain, which just makes sure that the pain grows and becomes trauma. And the inner guard, if you like, has less fabrication, is less labeling. They're the problem. This is the problem. It's experiencing pain, but it doesn't work inside us and generate lots of tafniot, issues, loops in the mind, and so on and so on. So how do we do that? The first thing is to see that, to be clear, that we have much more freedom than we realize. We have a freedom how we can look at things. We have a freedom to see things with new eyes. And in a way, that's what we're doing here. We're sitting here hour after hour after hour, back hurting. Sometimes, Sham Emily, what's all this? I should be in pub in Tel Aviv. Actually, we are developing the power to see things with new eyes, with different eyes. And I think that's, we have to have the confidence that the practice gives us the power of seeing things more flexible, with gemishut, less stuck with the filters, we're filtering of life. Life is like this, this is like that. Just now, before I came here, there was a telephone call from someone who was in, a mother, was in kind of really struggle because her son wanted to be in the army in a Kravi unit. And she was the only mother, a single mother. And the army said, a single mother has to sign that she allows her son to be in the unit of Kravi. And she said, I can't. And yet, I'm now the enemy. My son is fighting me day and night, as if I'm the enemy. But how do I sign such a thing? And she's in the Dharma. And so I thought about it from this point of view. The son is absolutely total, 100%. I want to go there. No flexibility. The mother doesn't know how flexible she can be. She's in a difficult situation. I was thinking about it in the way we build story and then we're inside it. And we need to see that we have much more power than we think to look at things fresh, not to have to believe in the filters, a filtering. We see the interpretations, parshanuyot, about everything, the constructions, the sankharas we make, which is the way we look at the world kind of automatically. But just to kind of really open, say, we have more freedom to look at things differently. And what that means is there's more space. And the space is a word that I used earlier, and Simi too, if to be able to have a more open mind, to be able to interpret things differently, to be able to look fresh at the world and not be stuck in interpretations and in hatnaya, conditioning, the way I am, then there's more space in the mind. And when we feel that space, we feel we are more, there's more freedom to be with new ways with things, then pain isn't such a disaster, because we feel we are able to look at it this way and this way and this way. It's more because they're work. We can be with it. We can. When the rockets were coming over Khalil from Lebanon, nearly 2 years, every day, not rockets every day, there weren't hatra'ot every day, but nearly, but there are a lot of booms and bangs every day, maybe 10 of them every day, because of the totachim from the, all the, near Yerka, there was a big, all around us was artillery. Anyway, one day I was in the middle of an online teaching, maybe to some of you here, I don't know. It was in, I think in, maybe in, I don't know when. And there was a hatra'ah on my telephone, which I really didn't like. But anyway, there it was. I don't know what to do when there's a hatra'ah. I really don't know what to do. We don't have a cheder mugan. So in some intuitive way, because my daughters keep saying, you've got to do something. When So I went under the table. I didn't know what else to do. And they were there. There's like 40 people on the Zoom. I said, just a minute, there's Hatra, I'm going on. And then after a minute, I came out and carried on Oto Mishpat, a Mishpat Abba. And someone on the Zoom said, what? There's a rocket going over and you come with a, like as nothing happened. You just, a Mishpat Abba, you just carry on. You could totally... It was, and I suddenly thought, oh, that's a good example of equanimity. I look at, like in the mirror, yes, that was equanimity. It's a sort of a picture of equanimity. So this seeing, our independent seeing, is a super important tool for us not to get swept away by, not just the feelings of pain will be there, but all the stuff around it and the stories and the nischafim, it gets swept by. And it's really important that we understand that, because it's our inner shield. I can look at things fresh, even a big view of things. There was an author, he was a priest from Holland in the time of the Vietnam War, and he would sit every night outside the Pentagon and with a candle and just sit every night, vigil you call it in English, just be like witness, I'm sitting here every night. And people will come to him and say, look, you, one person, you think you can stop the Vietnam War with one person sitting there with a candle? You think you can change anything? And he said something beautiful. He said, no, no, you don't understand. I'm not sitting here to change them. I'm sitting here with a candle so they don't change me. It's beautiful. Mamash beautiful. We should all take that inside us. He had that sentence that that Thich Nhat Hanh afterwards took from his book, and then we use that. His sentence was, "There is no way to peace. Peace is the way." In other words, it's not there. It has to be now. It's a very dharmic statement. And we used it in all our peace walks all the time, this same sentence. We just gave it to everybody. So it's the ground of that seeing is to have a bigger place where we belong, a bigger sense of life where we belong. That's why we are connecting to our breath, to the earth, to the trees, to the heart and to the mind, to each other. We're connecting to life because it supports the truth of things. We are made of infinite stuff. We're not made of thoughts. We are infinite beings. We are made of the sky. We have the same stuff as the sky. Rumi said, we're not a drop in the ocean, we're the ocean in a drop. That's what we're made of. Can we get a sense of that? And there is a deep, deep protection. The truth of this life is our protection. And the Buddha said, if you see things like that, if you practice mindful awareness like that, seeing the truth of this moment, the truth of life, the truth of the breath, the truth of the body, the truth of the sky, truth of the earth, the truth of things now, this life, then you will be an island in the stormy seas. You cannot be knocked over because you're resting in a bigger place. And that's all we've been doing it together here. So very often in the last 2 years, you know, I have many meetings and people have said, what do I do in this situation? I don't know. I'm lost. It's so crazy. It's so difficult. I'm lost. And one of the places, they're not in retreat, it's in an evening somewhere in Tel Aviv, but one of the places that I always suggest is to remember that we're big people. To remember, each of us, our bigness, our big heart, our big mind, our big awareness, which we forget. When we open the TV every day, or the social media, we forget. But in this book, in this room, how many thousands of wise books have we read? How many thousands of millions of beautiful thoughts we've had? How much love there's been that we've received and we've given, how much wisdom there is in this room. And then along comes, don't know what, media, whatever, and all forgotten. Like we forget who we are and we get, it's also impossible, and we get contracted. So we need really to come back to our Buddha nature. Buddha nature is a very big word, but it's more or less what I said just now. It's not more than that. The big place in us, to remember it. And from there, we know how to work with what is the unexpected, the painful, the uncontrollable, and the insecure. And it's a place we can kind of hold I think it's Tanisaro, no, I forget who it was, said there's a whole article, a big article on karma, and he said mountains are only heavy if you need to lift them. It's up to us. Mountains are not heavy, but if we need to lift everything, carry everything, then they're very heavy. Mountains are only heavy if we want to lift them. Thorns, kotsim, are very beautiful until we grab them. It's up to us. So another place that's really helpful to us to develop equanimity is in to keep remembering refuge, home, that it's like also an internal protection. Our love of each other, our love of our life, we have it, the shelter from the storm, you could say. We have places for us that are refuge. We should go there. In the 2 years my garden was a refuge for sure. It's wise. You choose a place which is right, which feels right, and you get support. And so this is external and internal. You find the refuge inside, a place of rest, a place that I can just feel there I'm settled. And our big Buddha mind is also refuge. It's a home for us. We can trust it. It's the way the big person that we are, like I mentioned before, that's also a refuge. It's a shelter. All the Dharma practice opens more space for us, opens more space in the consciousness. We see things wider. We see things less locked. Na'ul betoch filters, like I said. The space is a very good image. And there's a classic story of equanimity, which is a Zen story, which is really the best one. A passenger wants to cross a river, and he sees a boat and a boatman. He asks the boatman, "Can you take me across the river?" And the boatman says, "Sure, come on in." So they start to cross the river. And then another boat comes full of people and bangs into this boat. And the boatman starts to shout, "Oh, you stupid people, look what you've done." Da, da, da. Anyway, they carry on. And another boat comes and knocks this boat. And an empty boat comes. And the boatman didn't say anything. And the passenger said, "Well, why don't you shout? You shouted at the other one." And the boatman said, "Well, there's nobody to shout at." And the Zen story is, if we're more empty, there's nobody to shout at. We can't be shouted at because we're more empty. There's more space. And you can feel it. For example, places where you feel less triggered by things. For example, someone says to you some insult because it's up to us. If we got a big space in the mind, we don't care a damn. Let them say what they like. It's their problem, not my problem. Like the Buddha said, someone gives you a packet. If you don't want it, you don't take it, and it stays with the person out there. The delivery boy from Amazon. He has to deal with a packet. It's a packet you don't need to take. Why? Because you're free. But if you're, I, they can't say that to me. It's a contracted place. They're saying this to me. And we all feel pain. Space, being less identified with everything, less me in the middle of things. The empty boat, and we're less hurt. We're just less hurt by life. Because less somebody to be hurt. So we can't ask to be total empty. This is very much a Buddhist concept. But let's look at it a little bit more for you and me here. It's just having the awareness that be able to hold our experience with awareness. To be the witness. Her head is already more empty. So it doesn't ask us to be a total empty boat, like a kind of a total nothingness. But we're already doing it because there's more space in the mind. We're witnessing our thought. We're holding our thought. We're holding our feelings. We're holding our body. We're holding the world. We're holding each other. We're looking at the trees. That's already more space, less me in the middle. So there will be me in the middle, but it's less intense than the filter, total me. So the practice of non-identification, ihisdahut, is crucial in our Dharma, in meditation, in mindfulness, in anything we do in the Dharma. Non-identification is a key. It's very important to be less me, the center of everything. And part of the problem with that is that I have to carry the world on my shoulders because of the me. So it really helps. And all the practice, if you think back on the practice we've been doing even last night, the forgiveness, the mechila, how much that's about cleaning stuff we are holding. And again, we're dropping aspect of me that I have to hold and I have to, heavy on me. There's a lot of pressure on us from all kinds, all places. And we have a lot of pressure we put in ourselves. And the most pressure is things have to be different from what they are. That's a big pressure. And you think, well, of course things should be different. Obviously they should be different. They're not good right now. But that's not the point. Of course they are painful. But if we have in us the constant message, things have to be different. It's a message of frustration, of despair, of struggle against things. And it's a lot of pressure. Instead of that, we know pain. We know we can help if we can. We go out in the world and offer what we can. We give what we can to the world. And that's it, without the pressure that things have to be different. 20 years, or about maybe 15 years, I don't know. I don't have a sense of time anymore. I've been going to the Shtachim to work with Palestinians and Israelis together. And after all that time, people say, what? Everything you've done is wasted. It's gone nowhere. Look, it's worse now than it was before. Yeah, but who's measuring? Who's measuring? I think we did great things in this moment. We did great things. I remember one Palestinian boy, which has really touched me. Maybe he was 10 years old at one of the gatherings. And the first time he'd seen young Israelis who were not in uniform as police or soldiers. First time. And we were talking together and connecting together. And he came at the end of the weekend and said, I know that the human heart is not all hard. I can understand that there is softness in the human heart. Because before that, he assumed not only that the Israelis are just soldiers and so on and hard people, but the whole universe was full of hard people. It changed his life in a way. He said, I know really, and it will stay with me my whole life, the human heart is not all hard. So that's done. That happened. It can't be undone. So if we are more spacious, more a sense of space inside, and more open, more less collected around me and what I need and what the pressure to things to be different and things to be like this or that, then pain will appear, but it passes through us more easily. It will just pass through. We will not shut it down, but it will pass through. In the 2 years of, as I say, in Kleel, we never left. I never left Kleel to go run away. I just went around feeding the animals of the young families that went away. We fed all the dogs and the cats of the families that left to go off to Europe. More at the beginning, they came back. But there was a certain time when I did feel quite triggered in a very biological way. Every time there was a boom or a bang, which was, like I say, for 2 years, nearly 10 times a day at least. So I felt it came in the Marechet Atzabim. But it was also, if there was a motorbike, because in the road, it did the same to me. And my dog, same. So the dog and me got... And after it was there for a couple of weeks, and I realized that I had somehow lost equanimity. That somehow I wasn't paying attention to the equanimity. I'd assumed it that I had it, but clearly it drained away somewhere. So I got into a period of 2 weeks of quite deep meditation. And then someone came and said, don't forget, every boom and bang is like a stick of a Zen master. Wake up. Another view of looking at reality. It was possible. Wake up. Zen master stick. So in the Zen monasteries, The Zen master, the Rosh HaMinzar, goes around, and if he sees one of the monks or the students dropping a little bit or lost in thought or not concentrating or their posture shows they're all collapsing, he has a stick. Duck! Wake up! Yeah, he hits them. Not hurting too much, but just a wake-up call, you know. It helps us. It's not only the sense of more space in the consciousness, but also the big picture helps us. The wisdom mind is part of equanimity. Equanimity is the wisdom mind. It's seeing things from a bigger place where things, we don't carry everything on our shoulders. So a lot of that is in the big picture. I won't go into it in details, but it's understanding karma more deeply. It's understanding that samsara, and I mean, namely, the wheel of life, is not up to us to fix it. We didn't make it. And we can't stop it. We didn't undo it. We can't undo it. We didn't do it. And it's just something to understand. In the Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna had exactly the same statement. He said, how is it possible that I'm meant to fight now a battle with my cousins and brothers and so on? What happened that this, it's impossible. I can't do it. I'm going to just throw my weapons and go. And Krishna said, it's the way things came out. It's the way things are. You aren't in control. Karma did it to us. And because you're not in control, there's nothing to do. Just be yourself. Do what you need to do. And sometimes we just need to sort of have that big picture. The Buddha managed to stop some wars, but he didn't manage to stop others. And when he was asked why you didn't stop that war, especially his own people were killed in a tevach. And when the monk said, why don't you stop it? He said, in this case, I cannot. The karma is too strong. More or less what Krishna said to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. It's just too strong. We can look at what's happening now. And it's not fatalism. Although I have to say, Basograyam, sometimes in India, it becomes a little bit too much, this sense of karma, a bit fatalism. You know the word fatalism. How would you translate fatalism? It's making goral your temi die like only mashula sopa chayim. It's that sense of I give up because the whole of life karma just runs the. All the wheels of karma doing everything, there's nothing for me to do. It's a little bit too much in India. They've gone too far. But in the West, we've gone the other way, which is I can control everything. I have science. I can change the world and I can make a mess of everything. And so it's worth understanding that the big picture is there, and that it does help us, that we can offer ourselves to the world, but without an attitude that I, this person, can fix it. And it's a relief. I can't fix it, but I can offer myself as dana to help. Whether it means going to Kaplan, whether it means going to meet my neighbor, whether it means giving food to soldiers, whatever it means to anybody, doesn't matter. We're not talking about better. Not measuring anything, but just to see if we are called to give ourselves, it's good enough. And the sense of having a sense that it's not in our hands, we didn't make this situation and we can't unmake it, but we can offer ourselves. Hopefully we will become Nelson Mandela, one of you, and everything will change, but we can't guarantee. Yes, maybe he is. Absolutely. So, final word here. Equanimity is a power. And sometimes because it's quiet, we think it's not there. Equanimity doesn't shout. If we stay steady, we can influence other people to stay steady too. If we're in the middle of a kazer Havganah, our equanimity can help others to be less angry, afraid, hysterical, and also burnt out. Shchika. Equanimity helps us go there again and again and again because we are steady and not exhausted from emotions and from anger and from. So it is a power. There's a nice text that someone asked the Buddha, how do you argue with people that don't agree with you? And the Buddha said, well, actually, if they don't have a lot of emotion or they don't hold their views, imdot, very strong, it's easy. If they have strong emotion, but not strong views, or strong views and not strong emotion, it's not easy. But you can. Just you need the energy to talk to them. But if they have strong views and strong emotion, forget it. Don't argue with them. But never underestimate the power of equanimity. In other words, that's the bottom line here. Equanimity works. It makes a different atmosphere. And you, without a word, can create an atmosphere around you without any language other than presence and equanimity, meaning you're not knocked down. You're standing steady in life. And that influences other people as well. They get you as a model. Final word Equanimity is not adishut. It's not about being kind of ki'ilu teflon. Things don't come in, they just slide off. I don't want to know. I don't, you know, forget it. Sometimes we need teflon mind. It isn't absolute. Sometimes we do need it. It's okay. Sometimes we need boundaries. We need shirion chitzoni. Sometimes we do. It's okay. For example, coming to this retreat, I think some of you came as a place to rest, which is like external. I need to go to a place where I don't struggle. And it's like a boundary, and it's fine. But we just have to understand that that's what we're doing, and slowly, slowly move that, be less and less in the boundaries, the protection, hagana, chitzoni, less and less. Move those boundaries. But we shouldn't say that we mustn't have it. It's sure, sometimes we need it. It's really okay. We need, if it's too much pain, by the way, if we feel it's just too much pain in a certain situation, it's really, we shouldn't say, I must be Buddhist and I have to stand in the middle of this. No, at a certain point we feel that's too much for me. I'm not going there. It's really okay. It's the wisdom. We have to be wise. But slowly, slowly, through the practice, we will be able to take more and more of the pain of life. And the Buddha had big ears, if you know the picture. Because the symbol of the big ears of the Buddha was because he could take the pain from all beings in the universe. Okay, I think that's what I want to say. Thank you. Let's take a couple of minutes of quiet.